Welcome to Talk of the Bay and Encouraging Musicality in Children.
I am speaking with Barbie Wong, who is a musician and music educator in the Bay Area. And today, Barbie and I are going to discuss how people become musical in the first place. What makes someone musical, and how can parents encourage musicality in their children? Welcome, Barbie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
So before we get into the specifics of musicality and what that even is, can you give us a little background on what you've done, what your background is? How did you get into music in the first place?
Yes, I started music because my parents said, my kids need to learn music. And so, you know, I learned and I really disliked it until I was 13 and I went to music camp. And suddenly I realized, wow, this is a lot of fun because all my friends are making music, and music is more than just making music. It's also playing in a group. We're also practicing, so everyone else is practicing. So that's when I realized, wow, the social part of music is so important. And when I help parents, I really help them realize, you know, if they actually put their kids in social situations where they're making music with other people, then that makes a huge difference. And so from that, I didn't think I was going to continue being a music teacher or anything. But eventually I realized, oh, I didn't want to do pre-med. that was a little tough for me. And music just seemed like a really nice choice because I already knew so much. And my music classes at Stanford were actually, in the beginning, it was quite easy because of my solid musical background. And then I just continued, and I am so grateful to be both making music and teaching music as my profession.
And so when your parents first made you take lessons, how old were you, and what did they tell you to study, and did they decide for you or did you decide?
Yeah, they decided for us. They just, you know, we come, you know, I'm Taiwanese, and so we come from a culture where the parents mainly just decide. And so I was just taken to music lessons and told that that's what I had to do. I was then told I had to practice music. And my parents were never very explicit, but they did say they knew that having their children learn music was very important. They were very, very poor. So they put all of their resources into music lessons. I mean, we were so poor that my parents were collecting cans. They were very worried about money, but they somehow knew that investing in music was very important.
And so wow, I didn't realize that you were brought up so poor. So they invested in music rather than other necessities of life, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But they thought that music was a necessity of life, obviously. What do you think that they saw in it that they felt was really so important?
I think they saw that music was something that could really help develop their children in more ways than just academics. I think that they felt like they were going to give us something that we could use for the rest of our lives. And they have, actually. Both of my sisters still play music. And even though they're not doing it professionally, they still enjoy doing it. My younger sister, you know, sings in a choir. My older sister, she'll play piano. But, you know, one works in conservation architecture, and the other one is a city auditor.
Uh-huh. So, but that's great that your parents did succeed in raising three musical children,
yeah.
Whether or not, do you think that they thought of any of you pursuing it as a career? Cause I know you said that you made that joke about pre-med, but so many families, you know, they want their kids to be musical, but then if their kids want it as a career, they're like, whoa, that's not what I meant.
That's so true.
Not exactly your solid career.
You know? No, definitely not. And not especially in the Asian culture. I don't know what they really saw for us in terms of our professions. I knew they were very excited when I said, oh, I want to be a doctor, that I wanted to be both a medical doctor in the Western medicine and also, I wanted to study Eastern medicine and bring it together. So I think they were a little disappointed when I said, actually, I want to be a music major.
How are you going to pay the bills?
Yes, exactly.
Well, at least I guess that they, you know, they, since they weren't wealthy, they did have a sense that you could have a happy life and raise happy children without focusing on money, maybe. So that's good. So, but we're not really talking right now today about music as a career, but more about this question of what makes someone musical. And so let's start with the family where, you know, I'd say that this is sort of the prototypical American family that tries to get their kid to take music lessons. The kid does it for a while, and then there's a point at which they dig in their heels and they say, no more. And then often that's the last time they ever touch that instrument. Or if they do, it's just, you know, not, it's not to play music for themselves anymore. So how does that happen? Why does that happen?
That's a great question. And when I teach my workshops and I teach it to both parents and teachers, I have them really focus on these four words. And that is, kids love to copy. And, you know, kids love to copy because that's actually biologically sound. It really helps them, you know, bond when they're little babies. But that's also how they learned their mother tongue, the first language that they learn. They learn it by copying, and they're copying sounds. And that's really all music is. Music is a language that we learn through sounds. And so if we as parents make a lot of music, put a lot of music in the environment, the kids will naturally just pick it up just the way they've picked up their first language. So a lot of times you'll see musicians who raise kids, and those kids become, you know, musical and stick with lessons. But that's mainly because there's a lot of music already in the house. I don't believe that musical ability is innate. I don't believe that certain people are more gifted than others to make music. I believe everybody is capable of making music, but it depends on what kind of environment you're growing up in. And so I've actually made it my life's work to really research this. I've actually started interviewing musicians on what is it that they experience as children in their environment. And I've also read a lot of biographies. There's some great ones, you know, by Elton John, Dolly Parton, you know, Yo-Yo Ma, and Carly Simon. And they all pretty much talk about how musical the environment was when they were young. And even Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, the creator of Hamilton, his parents were not musicians, but they loved music, and they had over 100 albums and played it all the time. And so they saturated his environment with music. And it's not surprising that the kind of music that they listened to was musicals.
Uh-huh.
So I tell parents a lot of times, if you can just focus on the fact that kids love to copy, and if you want them to be musicians, then make sure that they're copying music. Have them see a lot of people make music. Have them hear a lot of music.
Yeah, and so the question comes up for me about that is there a difference between parents making music and parents playing recorded music? Do you think that affects children differently?
Yeah, I think there's some difference in that. Definitely, you know, if it's much easier for a child to copy someone doing something when they see them doing it live and it's a person that they know, than it is obviously when they just see a video. But it's still very possible to show your kids a lot of videos of people making music and to take them to live events. You know, my own parents didn't make music at all. But I did see my dad really love music. You could tell he would put on the Beatles and he would get a smile on his face. And so just modeling the love for music can be really helpful and really instrumental. But they would also play a lot of music for us. That was their instructions from my music teachers, was play a lot of music around the house. And they would actually record our lessons and play our lessons back to us.
Wow, interesting. I personally have always recorded my music lessons, but I play them back to myself as a form of torture. So, but I guess for kids, they tend to be a little less self-critical, and especially if they've been hearing it, and if you celebrate it.
Yeah.
You know, and that sense of celebration, I think, is really important too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think when we think about people who are musical, I think a lot of times we compare ourselves or our kids to professional musicians, right? That's a very different way of comparing than to say, well, if that person's learned a language, we don't compare them to someone who does theater or, you know, can recite Shakespeare at that level. We just compare them to another speaker of that language. And so I really believe in anybody just being able to make music, not needing to make it perfectly, and making it for enjoyment and satisfaction.
Uh-huh. Do you think that the emphasis in our culture on professionalism, letting professionals do the thing, and we've really, actually, I can say that one of the good things about the pandemic is I think this is reversed to a certain extent, but there was just this great movement in our culture toward even people stopping cooking anymore, or, you know, doing even basic self-care stuff, always leaving it to professionals. Do you think that has also affected how families see the musicality of their children?
That's a good question. I think it probably has. I think it makes it so that the bar is so much higher and everything is just, you know, photoshopped, or, you know, it's digitized in such a way that makes it look really perfect. And it's really hard to attain that level. And it's both also very hard to then be acclimatized to the more, you know, sort of common, just sort of casual jam session that you might have. And you hear people make mistakes. And so I think our ears are not attuned to hearing the live music that has been happening that, you know, I was just in Hawaii and, you know, a lot of people will just jam on the ukulele and you might have a string broken or it might be off tune. And it's okay. You're just kind of jamming along. And so I think that's why live music is so important to take kids to go and hear, because it just makes it so that their ears are more sensitized to this other kind of music, not just what you hear on the radio or on Spotify.
Yeah. I teach a history of music class for kids, and when I tell them, I reveal to them that they've never actually heard their favorite singers, modern singers' real voices, they're like, "What do you mean?" And so I turn on auto-tune and I sing with it so they can hear, because I just listen. This is what you hear on the radio, right? They're like, "Oh, yeah, that doesn't sound like a real voice." Yeah. So, you know, where do you suggest that parents find live music, you know, outside of buying tickets to events?
Oh, there's a lot of different places you can do this. If they live near any kind of college or university, the music department often will have musical performances, just student performances. I know at Stanford, I think there was like every Friday at noon, there was a performance, and those were free. In fact, I think a few years ago, I took my kids to listen to one. And they can also just look around if they have friends whose kids are making music. A lot of times they'll be at music studios where there are recitals. And those recitals often happen once or twice a year. And to go and sit in on those recitals, which is actually so wonderful for kids, because they can see that, oh, there's a kid that's my age who's playing this music. And it's not this incredibly, you know, intense, complicated music, but, oh, maybe I could do that. And so it exposes them to a variety of ages and a variety of levels of music.
Excellent. Well, we will be right back. We are speaking with Barbie Wong about raising musical children. We'll be right back after this break.
Hey,
Hello, everyone. We are back. I am speaking with Barbie Wong, who's a music educator and who is interested in the idea of how we raise musical children. And so you've talked about your own childhood. Could you give a little bit of a sketch of how you've raised your own two children to be musical people? What have you done? I know you're a music teacher, so they would have heard music all the time. But besides that,
Yeah, I have done a lot of things, and I would say that my first child was my experiment child, and so I
always.
Yes, yeah, so my lucky first child, she was exposed to a lot of music growing up, so that was great. And then I decided at some point, because she seemed to really enjoy us being at the piano, you know, she would sit on my lap and we would just play. At some point, I started teaching her some songs and she seemed to really get it. So then I advanced to, you know, more formal lessons and then practice sessions. But unfortunately, I didn't really have the skills to teach a young child because I was basically trying to get my child to focus on too many things at once. And I was being too critical. And so basically, by the time she was seven, she just said, I don't like piano. I hate it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to do something really, you know, drastically about this because I want my child to love music. And all along, I had thought about, you know, well, what if I took this course? And so I started taking music teacher training courses. I also started reading articles and books on musical development and started to research what is it that really helps a child grow to love music. And so luckily my younger child, by the time my younger child came along, my older child, I had basically said, well, if you don't like piano, let's have you choose another instrument. And so she went to cello by the time she was nine, and we found a great teacher. And so that was another part that I realized was so important is having a teacher who the child bonds with. And so my older child still studies with her and still loves her dearly. She's now 15. And so I think that's really helpful to her development as a musician. And my younger kid actually still studies with me. So I still teach my younger kid who's 13. And I just say, okay, let's see how far we can take it. I have many music teacher friends who I can, you know, ask to take on my child. But so far it's still worked.
Wow, that's great. And we discussed at the beginning of this interview the fact that we have been hearing your younger one at the piano throughout the interview, which is wonderful. I said, no, don't ask him to stop. So, because that's the sound of a musical household is a child just wanting to play and going and playing.
Yes.
So you said find the right teacher. What qualities would you look for in a teacher if you were, especially if you were someone, if you were a parent who's not a musician, what qualities would you look for?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when it comes to the very first teacher for the child, it's very important to find someone who connects well with children, who works well with children. There's actually been a study done by Benjamin Bloom. He actually looked at professionals in all these different areas, you know, in tennis, in swimming, in sculpture, and also in music. And when he looked at these first coaches or first teachers, he found that what they all had in common was not that they were the best in their fields. In fact, some of them were just kind of average, but what they did have in common was that they all were kind and warm and cared about children. And so what these first teachers did was they really helped make the environment inviting and, you know, somewhat fun and made it so that the child was interested and was motivated to make music. And so I advise the first teacher to be someone who's kid friendly. And then after that, if the child really takes hold and feels like, oh, you know, usually the parent sees, oh, I think the child has outgrown this teacher's abilities. They will find a second teacher who might not be as warm and friendly, but by then the love for music has developed. And so that second teacher can be a bit more strict and that's okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I know someone who who's a piano teacher, and she says that she feels a little bit the odd one out because she's also a professional performer. And she said most people at her level of performing don't want to work with beginners, but she loves working with beginners. So it's a, you know, it's an interesting thing. It'd be a good question to ask a teacher. So, you know, if you had to choose, would you work with, you know, beginning students, or would you prefer working with students who are already achieving? Are you interested in students who are going to be competitive? You know, maybe ask them questions like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's so important to know what the teachers care about. What are their goals with music? And also to then know yourself as a parent. Well, what are my goals for my child? And to see if my goals match up with the teacher's goals. Because if they do match up, then you can work together really well. And if they don't, you know, see if you can negotiate. But it's so important for the child to have some kind of connection with the teacher. Even if the teacher's a little bit more strict, the child has to feel like they are able to do the kind of music that they want, and that they're progressing. And so I always say it's a fit between a teacher and a student.
Uh-huh. And as far as younger children, well, first of all, what age do you think there's a specific age or a specific developmental cue to tell parents that kids are ready for private individual lessons on an instrument?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really think that there is a specific age. I know that there are students as young as 2 who take private individual lessons. That's very rare. And usually in those circumstances, it's the parent has been guiding the child and they've been, you know, doing a lot of music in the house. And then you also need to have a very special teacher who can teach a child that young. I think the youngest child I've taught is 3, someone who's outside of my family. And you know, we did about a 30-minute lesson where it was probably first 5 minutes was sitting at the piano. And then we would sing, and then we would, you know, do some music reading. So it really depends on the child and also on what the parents are able to do, and what the parents have done before they come looking for music lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that. Well, I wanted to ask you first about early childhood music classes, and I know that my kids went through years and years. From my point of view, years and years of music together, because I can sing every single one of those songs all the way through. Hello, everybody. What do you think about these classes for younger children? Do you think that they help create more musical children?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's a wonderful thing to have your children go be in a room filled with music, see other kids also there listening to music and dancing and moving your body. I think it's any kind of music that you can bring to your kids is positive.
Uh-huh. So, you know, what I found, I'm going backwards in my thoughts. So what I found was that with my first one, we were talking about experimenting on your first one, I perhaps went to private lessons a little too early. Mm. Like he didn't want the focus on him. Mm-hmm. He was uncomfortable with it. And so I don't know that I'd be able to do it right if I did it over again, but I did notice that. And with the second one, I waited until, you know, he was more specifically interested on his own, you mm-hmm. know, and I don't know if that helped, but it was an interesting thing to notice that some kids, you know, if they really like being in a group situation, they might not enjoy having a teacher's full attention.
That's true.
Or blossom under the full attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. With my own music studio, I actually require incoming students to come and observe at least 4 lessons, so that the students and the parents are actually watching what's happening. They actually get to know me before music lessons begin. And a lot of times what ends up happening is the child ends up really wanting lessons because they're in that environment. They're used to it. They're hearing the songs. First of all, they're hearing the songs at home because I have the parents play all that music. And so it's very familiar. I've actually had one parent tell me after two observations, is it okay? Can we just start right away? My five-year-old wants to start so badly. And so I remember the first day he just ran to that piano bench. So, you know, making, again, this is a way to create the environment where they get excited about music. And that's really helpful, especially for young kids, to really expose them to a lot and to really get to know the teacher before the first lesson begins.
Okay, so I have one more question, one more minute. How do we know if we've been successful? Because not all kids are going to grow up to be, certainly most of them won't grow up to be professional musicians, and many of them won't grow up to avidly even play an instrument on a daily basis. How do you know you've been successful in raising a musical child?
Good question. Well, you know, the definition of success is very personal. And for me, I would like to think that if someone grows up and continues to enjoy music, hopefully that they're playing music and they find the satisfaction with making music of any kind and of any level. I think that is a success, because when you make music, you know, the brain actually stimulates the release of dopamine, and that makes you feel good. And so hopefully through their lessons and through their music making as when they were young, they will continue to feel that way when they're older.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. And please, everyone, go check out Barbie's website, which is
BarbieWong.com.
Spelled exactly as you would imagine.
Thanks, Suki.
And now, more discussion of musicality and children with local educator Holly Ota. All right, I am speaking to Holly Ota, who is a music teacher here in Santa Cruz County, and we're going to talk about the topic of instilling musicality in children. So Holly, why don't we start just by, you can just sum up your career in, you know, sum up your career in 20 words or less. No, I'm kidding. Just go ahead.
Well, even in high school, I had opportunities to lead music. And so I knew early on that I wanted to be a music teacher. And I loved it, and completed a bachelor's in music education with the intention of becoming a band director. And it was suggested strongly to me that I had promising enough piano skills that I could go on and do a master's in piano. And so that's what I did. I went to Northwestern University and studied piano performance and pedagogy. Did a lot of teaching during that time, preschoolers, elementary age students, college students, and adult hobby students. And worked for a couple of years in Chicago and then moved to Santa Cruz and taught piano lessons for 28 years. And throughout those years, kind of moved between other things like elementary school music teaching, 10 years at Lynn Scott Charter School, and church music, worship directing, piano playing, handbell choir directing. And then currently I'm at Aptos High School in junior high teaching choir and some general music. And it's still exciting and interesting to me.
Well, that's the important part. I mean, that I, as a teacher, I know that the teacher's enthusiasm is really incredibly important. And you know, so this idea of instilling musicality, and if you're willing to talk a little bit about your own kids, because I know that, you know, part of what happens is in the home. So talk about your own kids and music.
I think I would probably go to my childhood maybe and say that my dad was a self-taught musician and did some performing in the kind of country music sort of genre, and his dad had been sort of a honky tonk musician playing banjo and harmonica and playing in clubs. Neither of them making that their career at all. But I grew up with such a broad range of musical styles that my parents really appreciated. I was encouraged, you know, from the time I was six to take piano lessons and to sing a lot. And to sing a lot at church. And when you do look at the careers of professional musicians, especially singers, so much of it started with the church for so mm-hmm. many successful singers, especially. So that's kind of where the heart of it was for me. And I would say I kind of just followed that model for the most part. Of course, they knew I was actually making a career in music, my children. And I encouraged them to explore music. They both studied piano with me. And one of them, it was harder than the other. And it was suggested that, you know, maybe we shouldn't keep doing this. Let's try with somebody else. And then by the time they got to the point where they wanted to study a different instrument, they actually were loving piano and didn't want to leave me. And then we did both. And they did violin study. And played in a few small ensembles. And the other child really loved singing and performing, but wanted to be in the background of it. But when you say musicality, two things that come to my mind when you say the question of musicality. One is that from a music teacher standpoint, when I hear musicality, I think about, does that person express the music well? Do they shape the line and the phrase? Do they listen intently for tone and nuance? Do they color and vary the sound in order to bring, you know, like a really compelling performance across? But when I think about musicality and what you develop in children, I don't think it's about them doing that necessarily, that would be the outcome if they want it. But I think that the essence maybe then of your question is more, how do you just get them to internalize and love music regardless of what the product is? Mm-hmm. And so that I think does come with just all that exposure, all that valuing of the arts, all the arts, because both kids study dance also, and visual arts, that you just honor art, mm-hmm. that you give it its proper place in society, regardless of whether or not it's expensive or whether or not corporate America values it or whatever. You just show that your personal values and your family values honor and respect artists deeply. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you mentioned the church and how many musicians, especially singers, come out of the church. And one of the things that interests me is the connection between music and community, and that music is a form of communication amongst all human cultures. And so church is an obvious place for that to happen. And it's sort of built in. But right. How could a family that don't have a regular church community, how could they do that, find work music into community?
Right. Well, there are several entities that exist. There's Music Together in our county, and Liz Hodgen-Wyruck is amazing with young kids. And I just had her come and speak to my high schoolers because her life in music is so inspiring. And they loved hearing about how she's gotten to the point where she's now spent 25 years leading that in our county after being a very high level performance trained soprano. She had the same sense of values of bringing music to the community and families and building those relationships with the families so that would be part of the fabric of her life. So that's a really great thing. Of course, the Cabrillo Children's Chorus under Cheryl Anderson. And you know, Suki, that I had a children's chorus at one of the churches where I was directing music that was not affiliated with the Sunday services. Mm-hmm. It was just a community opportunity. So those things exist. And of course, it's tricky right now, but it won't be for always.
We hope. Yeah, I looked at the Cabrillo Children's Chorus, and it looks like someone else is directing it, not Cheryl. So
that's news. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up. I emailed them to find out what was going on, whether they expect that they might start up in the fall, because that certainly, if they think they will, that I know apparently, from what I can tell, have been completely shut down through the pandemic.
And I did think this year that they have, because I have one student that is at Aptos High and she's singing in Cabrillo Chorale in place of that because she's very mature and mm-hmm. very well-developed in all her skills.
Yeah.
So I knew that it was not functioning right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So finding formal groups like that. What about in the home?
Well, certainly we don't have to have a record collection anymore. We have Spotify and Apple Music and all these ways that you can infuse your everyday life with all kinds of music. And the other thing that I just brought to mind is that we do all have a community where hopefully, but not every time, music is made and the mind is expanded and it's school.
Uh-huh.
So I would definitely campaign for more schools making certain that all of their students get a free music education.
Yeah, I have to say that when I saw what you're doing, I was really excited because for a number of years, Aptos High and Aptos Junior High did not have full support of a full position for choir director. I knew someone who had that job. Oh. Who was cut, her job was cut during No Child Left Behind era when everyone decided somehow that the arts weren't important. And then I know that they did a variety of things, tried to get one person to teach band, guitar, choir, and, you know, yo-yoing. I'm not sure.
Right.
But it seems, would you agree with me that the support for the arts and for music in particular in the public schools seems to be back up again?
In our district, it has definitely grown. And we have our own director that looks out for all of the schools of the district for visual and performing arts now. And she, having been a musician herself and her husband being a musician on the staff, faculty of Cabrillo, it definitely has more clout, it has more visibility, more structure, definitely moving in the right direction. And Aptos High and Junior High have complete offerings of choir and band at both schools now.
That's
band
really
came
great.
In a little bit after me, and it's building too.
That's really great.
It's
just so nice because, as we know, and this isn't the focus of the conversation, but it has been proven that making music is good for the other parts of the brain. That it, you know, children making music, it's going to help their math skills. It's going to help their social emotional learning. It's going to help their language. It's just going to help everything. There's no real downside to it.
Definitely not. And the things that students are going through right now, I think we all have finally, maybe not all, but more people are realizing that those emotional needs need to be met through more counseling and more focus on really the growing number of students with anxiety and depression and other types of mental illnesses. And music is just definitely one of the therapies that are used by professionals. I'm not a music therapist and I'm not a counselor, but I know that the music that I bring to young people's lives is therapeutic.
Uh-huh.
There's no doubt. And that sense of community that you talked about coming together and doing something purposeful together, something inspiring together, that is just good for young people.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about the kids that you're teaching, most of whom aren't going to become professionals or dedicate their life to music, what do you hope that they're taking away into their adult lives?
I hope they're taking a stronger sense of self and self-value, self-confidence, self-worth, and every facet of our society benefits from that. Everybody benefits when a person feels more whole, more important, more capable, and more inspired, you know, more interested in getting out of bed in the morning.
Right. That's a great way of putting it. And, you know, it's just so important to look beyond the question, you know, what is this going to do for my kids' grades, for getting them into college, for getting them into a career, because having a sense of music being important and just a sense of musicality can B, we have no idea how it's going to affect them. So certainly during the pandemic, with people trying to find ways to take care of themselves, to, you know, fill the holes in their lives. I know a lot of people who didn't have much time for music and have spent a lot more time on it. So that's great.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so thank you. That's really, you know, it's such an interesting question that, what we as parents and what we as a society do and how it's going to affect kids in a variety of ways. And the other interview I did in this vein was in was about teaching cooking skills to children.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so, you know, it just seems like all of these soft skills, as they call them,
right,
can be so influential on kids.
Definitely.
So thank you for your thoughts.
Oh, you're welcome.